All right, well, thank you for coming. And as Elizabeth said, I'm Greta Massetti. I'm the branch chief for the Research and Evaluation Branch in the Division of Violence Prevention at the National Center of Injury Prevention and Control at CDC. And I'm really glad to be part of this presentation because I feel like we're really taking this kind of cells to society approach. We're talking about communities and everything in between. And now my role is to just kind of bring the 10,000-foot view, which is where we sit at CDC, to think kind of at a national and federal level, kind of what is happening with violence prevention at the federal policy level, and what can we do to kind of bring about change at the community level. What's our role within that? So I'll talk a little bit about that. I have my disclaimer, and I have no relationship to disclose. So this is the overview of my presentation. I'm going to talk a little bit about context for youth violence, where we stand with the evidence, and talking really just, you know, where we are right now is about moving evidence to practice, moving really to figuring out how to work with communities. And then I'll talk about the federal government's role within that. And I'm going to leave you with some lingering questions to ponder because I won't be able to answer all of them. So just to provide a little bit of context, you've heard some amazing, wonderful stories from my co-presenters. I'm just going to kind of step back and talk a little bit about data that I don't need to convince anyone at a public health conference that violence is a public health problem. It is the second leading cause of death among youth ages 10 to 24. Among youth of color, African-American boys and Hispanic boys, it is the single leading cause of death. So it creates a tremendous burden on our healthcare system, on our criminal justice system, on our education system, to the extent that it doesn't just result in injuries, and it results in tremendous cost. The economic impact of youth violence, Benita, you know, mentioned a little bit about it, the economic impact on communities. It increases healthcare costs, it decreases property values, it disrupts social services. It results in an estimated $14.1 billion in combined medical and work loss costs. And that's an underestimate of the economic cost of violence because that doesn't include criminal justice costs. And that really has tremendous impact on those dollar figures. And it's not just about the perpetrators, and it's not just about the victims. It has an impact on communities and on our nation as a whole. We heard a lot also about a public health approach to youth violence. This is kind of our CDC thinking around the public health approach. Obviously, we really need to think about preventing violence before it starts. It's not just about response. It's not just about once it happens, how do we patch up the victims. It needs to be comprehensive. I think that in any public health issue, we're not going to fix our way out of the problem with a single program or one strategy. It really needs to be about how can we meet the needs of all residents in a community, regardless of levels of risk. And it also needs to be about matching the unique needs of each community. And you heard a little bit about that from Benita. We also need to really emphasize doing what we know works, what has been shown to have some effectiveness around violence. And I'll talk a little bit about that. We also really, you know, there is no, you go walk into any community, there isn't like the violence prevention community area. There isn't a building where you can go and say, oh, that's where they do violence prevention. We don't have an infrastructure. We have to work from a multi-sectoral standpoint. We have to engage criminal justice. We have to engage education. We have to engage the healthcare sector because we all have a role to play in violence prevention. Really need to not just reduce risk, but strengthen those protective factors that make youth more resilient and that kind of build on the assets of communities, of families, and of youth. And this is kind of where we sit within CDC is really just our role is uniquely to apply science to reduce violence, injury, and mortality in communities with the highest rates of violence. That's really where we need to start first. Okay, so just to give you a little bit of context around what understanding the evidence, this is part of a project that we've had going on in our division for a few years. It's called the Evidence Project, where we really are trying to provide some tools and information to practitioners, to communities around understanding evidence. And it really kind of maps out, rather than kind of creating categories, it maps out the elements of evidence that are represented in the kind of the evidence-based movement. And as you can see, you know, our work in science of violence prevention is really about moving to the very left-hand side of this chart, right? There are kind of promising, emerging, really good programs that have good quality elements. And we really need to figure out how to build the data so that we can make sure that there's some data support to make them well supported and supportive. It's about really understanding how we can leverage investment so that we know when we have those few and hard to get violence prevention dollars that we are investing them in the kinds of things that we know have the greatest chance of giving us good results. We also know, because there's a literature, that there are a number of strategies that can be really harmful. They have actually been shown to increase the likelihood that violence will happen. We really need to be able to know how to recommend against those, because this is a really risky thing. We're not just talking about the potential for bad things happening. We're talking about the likelihood that more lives will be lost if we don't invest well. So, you know, there's been a tremendous growth in the literature on violence prevention in the last 20 to 30 years. I think there was an Institute of Medicine report that mapped they did a literature search, and they mapped by year hits on, I think they were running things like evidence prevention, research, and violence, and they looked at the number of hits. And the graph is really dramatic. It shows that really there's been a tremendous amount of increase in the literature on violence prevention in the last 30 years. So we really know that there's a research literature out there. We just haven't built the resources and tools that are needed to get that research in communities. At least we haven't done that in a comprehensive way. But there's a lot that's happening right now, because this is really where we stand at the kind of that edge to be able to move from science to practice. So I'll talk about a few kind of things that seem to be happening and percolating. And this is not just at CDC. This is across the federal government, and in ways that are really thinking about how do you get from research to practice? How do you work with communities to kind of really benefit from that research? One is the kind of the advent of prevention operating systems, and I'll talk more about that. Then I'll talk a little bit about registries and other tools. Actually, I don't have a slide on prevention operating systems. So there are a number of researchers who were thinking a little bit about, well, we have these programs that are effective, but what we don't really have is some kind of a delivery system. We don't have that. We don't have the syringe to get that vaccine into the system. We really need to figure out how do you work with communities to find the best programs and strategies that match their needs, that match their levels of resources, that match the unique profiles of those communities, and how do we work with them to make sure those programs are really reflect their unique cultural needs. So there's been a couple that have been developed. One is called Communities That Care, the other is called Prosper, and they're approaches that really think about building community coalitions or working with existing community coalitions, looking at the data and the unique characteristics of those communities, and kind of guiding this strategic planning process to do comprehensive multi-sectoral prevention strategies. Both Communities That Care and Prosper have had their own evaluations, so they're not just evaluating kind of the programs that are implemented in their communities, but they're also evaluating the package itself. And for both of those programs, there have been really tremendous data showing the reductions in violent crime and violence and delinquency in those communities. There's some really good findings from those. Communities That Care is in the public domain. It was bought by SAMHSA, which is a federal agency. So it's free to kind of get the materials. So there's some costs involved in doing the community trainings, but it's really kind of the approach is really to try to get it in place in communities. There's also a number of evidence-based registries. This is unique to violence prevention. This is the Blueprints for Violence Prevention that's that is at the Center for the Study and Prevention of Violence at the University of Colorado. And this is really, they have a comprehensive set of tools and resources, but this is kind of the core of what they do is they're essentially have a clearinghouse of programs that have been evaluated and found to be effective to prevent violence. And you can see this is just one section or one landing page where you can, communities can search and look at, different risk factors, ages, audiences, and they'll kind of pull up a list of model and promising programs. There's also other ways to kind of go about, the Blueprints has a lot on it. So this is another way to look at Blueprints. Here's the model programs are listed right here. You probably can't read them, but they're things like, this fairly comprehensive package of things like school-based curricula, family models. There's a lot of mentoring. There's big brothers, big sisters. And communities, any users of the site can click on any one of those programs and they pull up a really comprehensive page with lots of information and resources and tools. Here's another example of a very similar approach that's just developed at the federal level. This is crimesolutions.gov from the Office of Justice Programs. So the Department of Justice's site. I only have 5 minutes. All right, I'm going to speed talk here. But it's not, so it has a lot of criminal justice focused type strategies, but also a lot of community level strategies that are not necessarily just criminal justice ones. So, for example, ceasefire is listed on there. So it has a lot of, this is, a slightly different approach. It has information on research. It has these kind of very easily understandable ratings. And then, so those are kind of registries that kind of synthesize the evidence for communities. This is CDC's website that is, it's called Strive. It's at www.safeyouth.gov. And this is really more about kind of building around those those registries, really building resources and tools to help communities, guide communities through strategic planning and other resources. So if you'll see, there's a take action section, the blue one in the middle, and there's a place where communities can really use some resources and tools. This is really, so you can see these are kind of ways of using media to kind of move the research to practice in communities. Because I basically said it. So then I'm going to just step back a little bit and say, so we've got a literature, we've got some resources and tools. Kind of where does the federal government sit? They're in the last, really since the beginning of the Bush administration, there have been tremendous efforts to move the federal government towards evidence. Recently, in the last 4 years, there has been a tremendous investment in that in terms of federal dollars. There has been a lot of administration support for promoting science and evaluation within federal programs. There's been a lot of work around defining the evidence and really kind of making stronger connections between funding and the evidence. This just kind of provides some of the federal context for you. So this is what, we sitting at the federal level at CDC, kind of this is what we hear from our bosses. And this is just kind of a thread that tells the story of kind of what the movement is at the for the federal government. One is the Office of Management and Budget. They released two memos. They're called Memos 13 and 14, very imaginatively, this year, that required federal agencies to, quote, use rigorous experimental evidence in establishing budget priorities. So this is really kind of how the federal government places some strings on our federal dollars as agencies around saying, CDC wants to invest in violence prevention. This is how we're going to do it. So they're saying, here are the standards that you have to meet in order for the federal government to be supportive of our initiatives. There's also a Government Accountability Office report on evaluation rigor that really defined tiers of rigor in evaluations and provided some strong guidelines and recommendations around evaluation. And it also, there was a Congressional Budget Office report on really focusing on the types of evidence that are the best quality evidence. So this kind of paints a picture around the different strategies that the federal government is using to move federal agencies towards greater evaluation rigor, towards evaluating what we do and doing what works. This provides just a kind of a context for how those federal dollars are funneled through our agencies down into communities. And it's our role as a federal government to kind of translate that and work in partnership with communities to understand, okay, what does this mean for Oakland or for Chicago or for San Diego or whatever it might be? And that's really kind of the challenge for us in kind of navigating all those different demands and challenges. There's also a lot of emphasis on cost savings because, as you might have read in newspapers in the last 5 years, we have some budget issues in the federal government. There's also been a lot of emphasis on using evidence in federal funding. So, you know, just two examples are ACF, the home visitation programs. There's been an investment of $1.5 billion in evidence-based home visitation programs. Teen pregnancy is $75 million. These are just two examples. The Department of Education has two programs, the Investing in Innovation Fund and the Promising Neighborhood. HUDS has a program. They're all kind of focused on really infusing communities with funding to do prevention, to do place-based strategies, and to use evidence to do those. The question, so I'll get to why haven't we gotten there for violence yet, but I'll hold off on that. I'm going to kind of take a detour about cost effectiveness. Because, again, this is all about the dollars, right? And it's about needing to make the case that if you invest in prevention, you will see return at the end of the day, because that's what policymakers care about. So there's been a lot of work around this as well. I'm just providing some examples. This is from the Washington State Institute for Public Policy, where they've done some really comprehensive looking at evidence-based programs for a number of different health and non-health outcomes. And they really kind of monetize the costs and returns on investment. And it gives you just, this is an example of, the summary statistics that tell you kind of for every dollar invested, what is the return on that investment? And you can see it kind of ranges. These are just some juvenile justice type strategies. And you can see also there's numbers that are in the red along the bottoms. That's for every dollar investment, what it will cost for programs that may be harmful, like Scared Straight, for example. These are just a different set of strategies. This is more substance abuse focused strategies. There's welfare strategies and all kinds of other things. So let's get back to, do we have the conditions to make youth violence prevention a priority? What would it take? So we have a critical public health need. We have an established evidence base. We have resources and tools for putting science to practice in communities. There's a lot more that can happen there, but we have things that are happening. And we do have rigorous evidence on the effectiveness and cost effectiveness of programs. I believe that we have the conditions. The question is just, how do we make that happen? How do we say violence is just as important as teen pregnancy prevention? Not that teen pregnancy prevention isn't as important, but we have the opportunity to make investments in ways that are strategic and that will give returns on our investments. So how do we make that happen? Those are all the lingering questions that we have. What needs to happen to move the needle in youth violence in communities? What do we need to do to really make this a priority for communities, for states, for the federal government? How do we build the will that we need to invest in evidence-based strategies? How do we get this? How do we get the attention of policymakers to really make this happen? And then at the end of the day, if we are able to do that, we also still need to continue to ask the question of how did we do? How well did we accomplish this strategy of trying to prevent violence nationwide?